You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Welcome into Hour 3. Peter Burns sitting in for Paul Feinbaum. 855-242-PAUL is the phone number. We've been talking the name, image, and likeness stuff with everybody up in D.C. We've been talking 8 versus 9 conference games, schedules, some upsets, and documentaries as well, too. Anything you want to talk about, really. 855-242-PAUL is that number. Hazel is in West Virginia. What's up, Hazel?
Well, hello there, Peter. I really enjoy it when you're on the show. I know you're one of those Mike the Tiger people, but I'm up here in Mountaineer country, a rabid Alabama fan, and I wanted to piggyback on the call you received earlier from Richard regarding the 1992 team. I just love that team. The bookends, Copeland and Curry, and I'm a retired military officer. And after I retired from the Army, I went back to teaching, and I taught Spanish. And it was always an extra point question at the end of their Spanish quizzes. It was always an Alabama question. And it usually went back to that 1992 defense. And I told him in my class, you're going to learn Spanish in here, and you're going to learn Alabama. And ladies, sorry about your luck. So I just wanted to, support Richard in wishing ESPN or someone would put something out on that 1992 team. I can't tell you much about the offense. I knew who the quarterback was, but that defense just caught my eye. And I've been an Alabama fan for over 65 years, and I remember the 61 defense, but that 92 team was unbelievable. One of their, as I said, I didn't really did much for the offense, but one of the tight ends from that team lives about 50 miles down the road from me up here in West By God, Virginia.
That's very cool. I mean, yeah, that Alabama defense, what, less than 10 points a game, less than 200 yards a game? It was a historic defense. But more importantly, Hazel, like, where were you stationed at? I'm curious about your journey.
I was stationed at Fort McClellan up by Anniston area for 3 or 4 tours. In those days, the women had our post was Fort McClellan, so you always went back and forth to McClellan between assignments. You always got – so I kept – being called back, but I went to Birmingham and watched a lot of the games because that's where they were played in those days. And my dad raised my two brothers and I. We followed the Bear, and but that, like I said, the my famous question was: I think 7 of those starters on defense were the All SEC defensive team that year.
Cool.
I used to catch them on that, and I told any of the male teachers I talked with, don't you dare help these kids out. They got to come up with an answer on their own, because the reward was I took them to the Mexican restaurant as kind of a graduation thing.
Did anybody ever get it right, Hazel?
No, they came close, and they came up with some really great answers. But they couldn't. They knew that the defense was good, but they couldn't give me the specifics on it. And I can still hear. I can't remember the sportscaster. You used to say "woo doggy," but I can hear him hollering, "Teague's got the ball. Teague's got the ball. Teague stole the ball." when he took away from the Florida players out of the Florida players' hands in that 92 championship game.
It's incredible, Hazel. Thank you so much for the phone call and the great memories and spreading the word of the SEC gospel to your students back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, up here with these Mountaineers, I just kind of keep my mouth shut when they try to talk football to me. But and do give my best to Mike the Tiger when you see him.
I will definitely do that. Thanks,
Hazel. Talking to you. Have a good one.
Have a great one. I love those phone calls. Talking just a little bit about the kind of the history and how it kind of just means more. Gunny is in Georgia. What's up?
How you doing, Peter Burns? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you as well.
I'm 79 years old. I'm an old SEC player from way back, and I'm all for players getting paid in the NIL and everything. But what really gets my goat is it's time for the NCAA to step in and make severe penalties for people interfering. People go through the portal. They know where they're going. Mm-hmm. And so when they put severe penalties on people for interfering and promising kids, if you'll go through the portal, you'll be coming here and be our first-string quarterback, and we'll have you NIL for $1 million. And I don't care whether it's the assistant coaches, the coaches, the fans, alumni, or ever who it is, the NCAA could put severe penalties on the people for interfering. And that I think that's they should step up and do their job or either go away. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gunny. It's interesting because the name, image, and likeness aspect of it, I think there's every single coach has come out and said it, whether or not they believe it, but at least they've come out and said it going, hey, listen, if I make $8 million a year, who the hell am I to say that a student athlete shouldn't be able to make a couple of dollars themselves, right? But a lot of people, and what Gunny is talking about is people saying, hey, you know, if all of a sudden I say wink, wink, you know, come over here. I mean, there was a Georgia football player the day before the spring football game. This guy was a starter for Kirby Smart, was going to be a starter, okay, on Kirby's defense. All of a sudden, he's like, I'm out. I'm gone. I would imagine there might have been a dollar or two, you know, played into that factor. And so if that's the case, I don't know how they do it. But to me, it's not a name, image, and likeness issue. But if you went back to the old days of, hey, if you're going to transfer schools, awesome. Congratulations. You need to sit out a year. Like, no exceptions, no whatever. Now, if that's what the coaches want, try to all put it together like that way. The reason why the coaches won't do that, though, is because how often do they like to pick and choose players from the transfer portal? So while everybody's complaining about it, they're still doing it as well, too. So you can't speak out of both sides of your mouth right now. Mark is in Mississippi. What's up, Mark?
Yeah, Peter, I just wanted to share a quick story about that 92 Alabama team.
Would love to hear it.
I'm a diehard Alabama fan, and I recorded that game. And several years after that, I would play it with friends, and they had forgotten about it, and I would make bets on them and tell them, Miami offense won't even score a touchdown. So anyway, I got a lot of use out of it, but that was the greatest team I think I've ever seen so far. Yeah. I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, you go back and look, Mark, and then, you know, the game at Legion Field, they beat Florida by a touchdown, and then they play historic Miami. And this is kind of one of those first times where I think the SEC had that kind of that moment, right? You had to have a genesis at some point of, hey, how are you going to become great? Well, Alabama showed that it could compete with anybody right there. That 92 team in the Superdome was great. George in Georgia. What's up, George?
Hey, how's you doing, Peter Burns?
Doing great.
I watched five of those games in 92. And the thing I'll never forget is Gene Stallings, if he'd ever get a lead, they'd run three and out. He would never run the score up. And I remember when they went into that game with Miami team give them heck about y'all are fat, slow, and can't move and all that kind of stuff. Bill Oliver was the defensive coordinator, and they had a defense that was unbelievable. And I'll never forget, he played 11, everybody on the line. They were hitting all the receivers coming off. They just and blitzing everybody, and Miami could not handle it. Hmm. And then finally in the third quarter, that all-great receiver got loose 5 yards ahead of George Teague, and George Teague running down, did a tomahawk on him and took the ball away, and I'll never forget that.
I mean, Teague, too, I think picked off Gino Toretta in that game, if I'm not mistaken.
He sure did. He did that, and he took the ball away from that receiver.
It's crazy, right? When you talk about, man, I can't even remember what I did on Tuesday of this week. And I don't even know what day it is right now. I think it's Thursday.
Yeah,
but then, like, you can vividly remember a play from 1992. It's crazy, George.
Right. But I also remember that year that when they played Mississippi State, that was their closest game to losing. And at halftime, Stallings talked to the two defensive ends, and he said, I'm waiting for y'all to start playing like you're All-Americans. And boy, that second half, they put it on.
They ended up winning that game. I'm taking a look at it real quick. If that was, 30-21 there in Starkville.
But they pulled it out at the very end, too.
Unreal.
They were losing at halftime.
Just, again.
All righty.
Thanks, George. Appreciate
Thank
the phone
you.
Call, Ben. Peggy in Tennessee, you hanging in there?
Oh, hello there. How are you?
I'm doing well, Peggy. How are you?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I think we may have talked once before, but I'm not sure.
Perhaps, but it's my pleasure again.
Thank you, sir. So many topics, but I tell you what, I am going to try to answer the question you ask and just try to stay on topic. And I'm not really going to address any of the callers, except if they asked a question, I think I might have the answer to, because I don't even want to go there. I just could go berserk. So, I'm going to talk about the documentary question. I would like to see a documentary on Tennessee. And the reason I say that is because I don't think anybody really knows the full story about Neyland. And his biography is truly, truly amazing once I got in there and dug around in it myself. And the early championship they had, the story of that, what they accomplished. He actually, General Neyland, he actually left it when they had had a winning season and never lost a game. Or nobody scored on them, I believe it was. Now, somebody check me on that. It's in the 30s. So, anyway, I'll take a crash course because I don't want to just be this rabid UT ball fan that I am. I really want to know what I'm talking about. So then, the three championships they do have, I think, if I ain't mistaken, they might have been one in the 50s. I'm not sure. I know about the one with T. Martin. So, anyway, it just became so interesting to me. I kind of looked at it like a history thing. There's a very good documentary, but from the, I believe it's the Knoxville News Sentinel. If it's not, it's the other one. But they did one. It's a two-parter, and it's about 100 years of Tennessee balls.
Mm-hmm.
It covers it up to probably Peyton Manning and T. Martin. I think the story after Philip Fulmer and the desert we've been in for 15 years and what's fixing to happen with the Eiffel is going to make the most amazing documentary. And this rivalry between Alabama-Tennessee is for 20 years has been until, the past 15.
Yeah.
He had our number. And I think that loss up there in Knoxville when he almost got swept up in that crowd and hauled out with that goalpost put him in PTSD. And that's why he wants 8 games instead of 9. So I think the Tennessee's documentary, and to answer the question, the guy wanted to know if Tennessee might beat Georgia. I read the tea leaves. I've been putting it off. I was going to wait till it got closer to season. I read the tea leaves on the two that mean the most to me, which is Florida and Alabama. But I went ahead and done one for Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee's going to beat Georgia.
Peggy has called her shot.
Yep.
Peggy has called her shot. Peggy, thank you so much. I'll tell you what. What you're going to do there, Peggy, is you sent a great idea about General Nealon. Coming up, I'm going to tell you, there's a story about Nealon that a lot of people don't know, so stick tight. I'll tell you that story. It's really fantastic when you start digging into the history. And more of your phone calls coming up as well. 855-242-PAUL. Peter Burns in for Mr. Feinbaum.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Go back, Paul Feinbaum Show. 855-242-PAUL is that phone number. We had a great call earlier talking about the 1992 Alabama squad and really kind of, you know, what documentaries we would love to be seen made. And I told you about General Nealon. Now, a lot of people know Nealon Stadium, where Tennessee plays out of, but I wanted to go through real quick. I put a Twitter thread a while back about General Nealon. So for those who didn't know and just watching, here's the history legend. Or the lesson. He was like the original transfer portal guy, okay? He originally went to Burleson College, then played baseball and football over at Texas A&M. After a year at A&M, he went into the Army, and at the Army, he was stud, right? He won 31 games as a pitcher. General Nealon did, okay? He won 20 straight college baseball games as a pitcher at one point, and then he was also an end on the Army National Championship team. So great at football, great at baseball as well. And he was the heavyweight boxing champion for Army for 3 straight seasons. So he was so good at baseball that he actually got recruited to turn pro by by New York, Philly, and the Detroit Tigers. But he said no. He chose to go into the Army in World War I and was stationed in France. While he was in France, After he was in France, he got stationed in Mexico and was part of the raiding parties trying to get Pancho Villa over there in Mexico. At 27, he had become a regimental commander in the U.S. Army, but somebody, and I think it was the New York Times, wrote a report or a story about General Nealon at 27. The Army found out that he was only 27 years old and said that was embarrassing. We can't have somebody this high up that young. So they basically removed him from that duty, and then he actually ended up going to MIT. They said you need to get a little bit older, basically. So there is, in essence, where he studied civil engineering. That makes sense because he ended up coming back into Knoxville and drawing up the plans for what was, you know, originally now are known as Nealon Stadium. So again, kind of crazy. The first win had he ever had at Tennessee. This is General Nealon. 1925. The only reason why he got that victory is because the head coach that day had gotten stomach poisoning. MB Banks was so sick he couldn't coach that game. And so sure enough, it was a huge upset. Tennessee, led by General Nealon, ended up beating Georgia 12-7. He became the head coach in 1926. So ends up winning a couple of titles. So think about this. Nealon fought in two world wars, chased Pancho Villa, won war medals, and won four national championships. Like, I guarantee you, there's a lot of people that go to the University of Tennessee that didn't even know how great of a badass the General Nealon was. So just a kind of a cool history story there. Tim in Florida, thanks for joining us here on the Paul Feinbaum Show. What's up, Tim?
Hey, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. It's great to be in the Sunshine State. It's great to be a Florida Gator. Before I get to my kind of docu-series, I'd love for Alabama fans to remember what took place in 1990. 1991, Steve Spurrier took down Bama. And then again, I believe it was in 1996, SEC Championship. You guys got smoked that year as well. But I think the mid-2000s for Gator Nation was just an incredible time. You had Billy Donovan that delivered two natties. And then, of course, Urban Meyer, two national championships. But for me, it would be the mid-90s and Steve Spurrier and what he was able to capitalize on and, in my opinion, revolutionize football in offense and Danny Werfel and all of those guys, Kevin Carter on defense. We were just as strong on defense that, as we were on offense. And a lot of people don't remember that. We did get smoked in 1995 in the national championship. I believe we were undefeated that year. And Lawrence Phillips, I believe, was the running back for Nebraska and just ran wild. And so to see James Bates, I think Chris Doering was on the team as well at that time.
Yeah.
But to come into the 1996 season and have the year that we did, to lose to Florida State, final game of the season, and then some things had to happen in the kind of the bowl season in order for Florida to get into the national championship game. I think it's a story that's worth telling. I'd love to see it as a Gator fan.
Tim, thank you so much for that. And again, one of the coolest things is I co-host with Chris Doering on our SiriusXM show, and on Mondays and Fridays it's on the SEC Network, but we do it all year long. And it's just the stories that Doering tells about Spurrier. And if you ask Spurrier right now, Tim, if you would have been here and you asked Spurrier about 1991 game four of the season against whoever, he could probably tell you play by play. He's like one of those people that just have this incredible memory. And the more and more stories you can be around Coach Spurrier, it's always a hell of a good time. LB is in Hoover. What's up, LB?
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Doing great, man.
I don't hear people talk this much about it, but Alabama, you know, I've been part of going on seven decades. They won a national championship six out of the last seven decades. Does another school come close? Miami, maybe?
Yeah, but, I mean, you think of Miami, and Miami was terrible before Snellenberger got down there. So it wasn't like they were doing something in the 60s and 70s. It really wasn't until, you know, he kind of put a fence around the city of Miami and kept all the guys there. I mean, that was a great documentary on the U about how Snellenberger, you know, turned Miami from a really bad program into a good one. But, no, I mean, six out of seven, I can't think of a university that was even close to that, frankly.
That's what I'm saying. I never hear anybody bring that up. But, you know, I mean, Auburn's 10, good enough. They've won two. I mean, there's a lot of schools that haven't won any. But, I mean, each decade except the 80s. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's different styles too, right, LB? Right? I mean, it was, you look at 92 and how good that defense was. You go back and look at 2020 and how offensively minded that team was. I mean, we've seen a bunch of different iterations of how you won a championship down in T-Town.
Sure enough. Hey, good shot.
Thank you, LB. Appreciate it. 855-242-PAUL is that phone number. Also, we got a little college baseball coming up. We've got Florida end up taking on South Carolina, LSU, and Kentucky as well. We'll talk to Nick Delatorre. Not only what's going on with Sully's baseball squad, but Billy Napier. A lot of big question marks coming into year two. We'll get a preview of the Gators coming up next here on the Paul Feinbaum Show.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Looking forward to this 2024 football opponents reveal. Notice we didn't say schedule. You're going to know who the opponents are coming up on Wednesday night. Me and Dario will be anchoring the coverage. New College Football Hall of Fame member Takeo Spikes. And look at Chris Doering. Look how bronzed he looked in that. It's like a Adonis out of the Atlantis Resort. They're off a vacation. They're ready to go. Actually, Doring's probably going to be down in Gainesville because we got South Carolina and Florida. Remember, LSU going to be hosting Kentucky in two of the SEC versus SEC matchups coming up this weekend. That first one opening up on Friday night. Sully's crew will be going on ESPN2 at 6 p.m. Then Alabama taking on Wake Forest. Little breakfast ball there, 11 a.m. Central for the Tide, and Southern Miss against Tennessee. Tennessee should be hosting that, but don't even get me started. That should not be played in Hattiesburg, but I don't want to get – I'm just here so I don't get fined. Nick Delatorre is joining us right now from On Three. Nick, I assume you're not playing as good a golf as Fred Biondi, who was incredible over at SEC Golf Championships, and now he's incredible in the Corn Ferry Tour. But what are you more excited about right now, this upcoming football season or what you're going to see in Gainesville as far as Sully Screw taking on South Carolina?
I'll go with the season that I'm in right now, and Sully and the baseball team. They've been a pretty special team all year long. I made a picture telling fans I wouldn't overhype them, but they've certainly lived up to as good as I thought Florida would be this year. Jack Caglione obviously has been the huge story, but really the pitching staff has hit its stride as the games start mattering a little bit more right now.
Yeah, and I think, Nick, that was the issue with Sully's crew the last couple of years is they didn't have this Logan Shore, this Alex Fajedo. They didn't really go deep, and it seems like they've got that guy in Brandon Sproat. Cags is pitching a little bit better, you know, deeper into the season. But really it's kind of been their bullpen, and spot starts have been fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, and the bullpen's been a roller coaster. You know, Florida's bullpen, Brandon Neely was ejected on the Sunday prior to Florida going up to Columbia. So you didn't have your closer, who is second in the country with 12 saves. And then Florida just held a walk-a-thon. I don't know where they donated the money to, but they walked 24 Gamecocks that weekend, hit two more. That was probably the turning point for the bullpen. They have defined roles now with Neely at closer, Ryan Slater, Cade Fisher, who was phenomenal for the Gators in the game six against Texas Tech. And then Philip Abner. So you've got two lefties and two righties out of the bullpen that you feel really confident in high leverage situations. And whenever you need to go to the bullpen, those are the guys that that they'll lean on. And then obviously the front line starting. Brandon Sproat came back to Florida, could have signed with the Mets last year, came back because he wanted to win an SEC championship. He's done that. He wanted to go to Omaha, and they'll have the opportunity to do that this weekend. And then obviously Hurston Waldrop's the only player on the roster. This is weird to say, Peter, the only player on Florida's roster who has played in a super regional. And he did that with Southern Miss last Wow. year. They lost to the eventual national champion, Ole Miss Rebels.
I was going to say, yeah, because this team is kind of, I mean, as big of a drought as it's been for South Carolina, who hasn't made it to Omaha since, I think, 2012. Mm-hmm. I think it's 2018 since Sully's crew. So there would be a complete turnover of that roster. What's the feeling there in Gainesville? Because, you know, I've long said, I always thought Sully was kind of looking around at other gigs because he didn't think the stadium was up to par. And sometimes, or this is me saying it, that the fan base wasn't there. A lot more supportive with the new additions that they've made out there at that stadium?
Yeah, the stadium is beautiful. I was joking earlier with Alyssa Lang and Doering that it might be too nice because you don't really get rowdy fans. I think they sold the place out in 20 minutes. And I'm expecting a great crowd, but they've definitely given Kevin O'Sullivan one compensation. He signed a 10-year deal, which is probably coming up on some renegotiation extension talk about 8 years ago. And then the stadium is beautiful. It's a really great place to watch a game. The outfield seating, the berm seating is really great. So I've enjoyed covering it, covering it from there. Nice little press box for us. But yeah, it should be a really cool environment. And this is the kind of stuff that they built it for. You know, you can get 7,000 people, 8,000 people last weekend for a regional. Maybe you take the fire marshal out to a steakhouse and try to sneak in a couple extra thousand this weekend with some general admission tickets.
They've had success. I think the last seven times that Florida's played in a super regional, they were able to win at least two and find their way up into to Omaha. I want to flip it on the other side. Obviously, Sully's doing good. Billy Napier trying to find his footing. The football facility is awesome. I've been down there. I've checked it out. The recruiting has been fairly decent, not as probably as what he'd like it. How important of a season is it for Napier down there?
Yeah, I think the schedule is really tough. When you look at Georgia, you have to face Arkansas with a new offensive coordinator and KJ Jefferson's back. Of course, always the LSU trip. Tennessee early in the season. Joe Milton's getting a lot of hype. I think it's a really tough draw for Florida. I think you're trying to like look at the scales of justice. And if Florida goes 6-6 again on the field, how good of a recruiting class does that have to kind of even out those scales? And with DJ Lagway, who's, I think, one of the best quarterbacks in the country for the class of 2024, committed, keeping him committed and making him really the centerpiece of this class, if Florida can come away with a top four, top five class, I think this year on the field, as long as you're competitive and not getting blown out, I think fans will say, okay, well, the previous coaching staff didn't recruit to the level they needed to, and the roster needed to be overhauled. So I think depending on what some of these losses and these games look like and how good the recruiting class is, you know, you'll get some a mixture with the fans with their concerns about Billy Napier and the program.
Nick, last question for you. Was there any kind of feeling from Florida and Scott Strickland of that group about where they landed 8 games versus 9 games and what they want to look at going forward after 2024?
Yeah, I think Florida is fine with going to 9 games. It is interesting for Florida because you have that game against FSU that will be played, and you also have a neutral site game. Now, they are compensated, both Florida and Georgia, very well by the city of Jacksonville to host that game there. But I think Florida's fine with that competition. And Scott Strickland has kind of been at the forefront. We had him on our podcast over a year ago, and he kind of predicted and foresaw this Big Ten and SEC kind of separating and being more of a Power 2 than a Power 5 even. I don't think Florida's worried about that. They have scheduling out till 2030 with Notre Dame and Colorado, which hopefully we'll see if Deion's still there. That'll be a fun trip if he is. So I don't think Florida has any reservations with going to 9 games. And honestly, I think that's what the fans would like to see.
Yeah, eventually, right? Well, the fans should get a hell of a show. That South Carolina-Florida Super Regional is going to be one for the ages, and we will at least we're guaranteed at least 2 teams in Omaha this year. So hopefully we get a chance to see you out there, right?
Absolutely. There Have a good one, Peter.
Nick Delazori joining us from On3 Sports. More of your phone calls now. Let's get into Matthew in Alabama. What's up, Matthew?
Hey, sir. How are you?
Doing great, man. Thanks for patiently waiting on hold.
Oh, that's fine. I just wanted to ask you or actually tell you my prediction for the top 5 college football teams this year. And then get your opinion on if you thought it was a realistic poll.
Okay, I got my pen. Tell me which ones.
All right. So I think the number one team's going to be Alabama. The number two team's going to be Georgia. The number three is going to be Ohio State. The number four is going to be LSU. And then I think the fifth team will be Texas.
You know, Matthew, I'm really curious. Out of all of those, I think I'm most curious to see how Texas is going to play, right? Quinn Ewers is going to be the quarterback, we assume. Arch Manning waiting in the wings, probably going to redshirt this year, kind of learn the ropes to a certain extent and have them ramped up for 2024. But this is a monster year. We talked about monster year for Billy Napier just now. That's a monster year for Sarkisian out in Austin as well, too, to finally find some footing before they jump into this meat grinder.
Yes, sir. I think they got a top 10 recruiting class, and I think they have a really good coach, too. He used to coach at Alabama, obviously. So yep. I think they have a good coach and a good defense, and I don't know if they'll be a top 5 team when they come to the SEC. I think they'll still be a top 10 team, but I think this year they're definitely capable of being a top 5 team.
Well, and I'm looking forward to, I mean, that game, what, in T-Town coming up, I think it's the second week, Matthew. That's going to be a monster game, not only for Sark, but I think even more so for Coach Saban. Early in his you know, season here, to make sure that they've got it flipped around. If all of a sudden, can you imagine the chaos? Can you imagine this show, right, hosting this show that Monday, if Texas goes into Tuscaloosa? But we'd have to get a new server for these numbers. 855-242-PAUL is the phone number. More of your phone calls coming up next. Peter Burns in for Paul Feinbaum.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Back to the Paul Feinbaum Show. Hit me up on Twitter at Peter Burns ESPN. You can always give us a call as well. 855-242-PAUL is the phone number. Eric in Georgia. What's up, Eric?
Hi, Peter. The last time I called into the show, I told you how the SEC only got to 8 games because of Pat Dye. I trust you remember that.
I do, yeah.
And I told you at that point that these guys would find a way to stay at 8. Now, my prediction for the future, they will load up that schedule next week with games that people want to see, maintaining the rivalries. But then they're going to claim that it worked so well that they are continuing 8-game scheduling in the future.
Eric, I mean, I'll be hosting that show. I will know when you guys know. I mean, it's kind of an embargo as far as what we'll find out as far as the opponents are next year. And I'm as curious as you are right now to see what they're going to have with Oklahoma and Texas coming in. Like, do we get to see Texas and Texas A&M? Do we get to see, we are going to see Oklahoma and Texas. I would imagine that's definitely going to be one of those matchups.
No, Peter, what I'm telling you, they are going to give you a marvelous grouping of games to show how well 8 games work. You are going to get dream matches, all the ones you've always wanted to see. And then they will say, this works so well, we're going to keep it at 8.
Eric, I think, I don't know if I necessarily buy that though, because while I think that they will have great matchups, you know, is there an onus for them to care what anybody thinks about 8? No. I mean, if they did, they would have changed. They would have gone to 9 right now. I think for them, they look at it and it's like, we're going to create something. Because I think what it is, a lot of teams already had scheduled 2024. Like, if you go back and look at the non-conference games the conference has already set, I mean, LSU's playing USC and UCLA. We've got Alabama going up to Wisconsin. I think that a lot of them, they looked at it and go, well, wait a minute, we might stay to 8 now and get 2024 off the books And then that way gives us a little bit more flexibility. But I don't know if I'm buying them saying is, you know, the eight game, they're going to try to front load it so good so they can just remain at eight.
Well, that's, I've told you, that's the history of these coaches. Mm-hmm. They duck one another. They don't want to play one another. You will never get a quorum of coaches who want to go to nine games, ever.
You know, it's interesting because Alabama head coach Nick Saban, for a while there, Eric, had talked about, hey, he was in favor of nine. And all of a sudden, push came to shove. And, you know, then he's like, well, let me go take a look at eight. So, again, hey, you were right about the eight-game schedule. Let's see if you're right about that. Let's get in one more quick phone call in here. Charlie in Alabama, what's up?
I just wondered. I live in Gulf Shores, Alabama, and I'm a LSU fan like yourself. And I take a lot of heat being an LSU fan, but you need to talk a little more about the Joe Burrow team of that won everything, you know?
You're talking about the documentary, if you're going to do one documentary, Charlie?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the 2019, it is interesting because while they were so dynamic, I don't know how interesting they were off the field. You know what I'm saying? Like, Johnny Manziel was interesting off the field. I mean, you go back and look at some of these other storylines. Even the Cam Newton 2010 season was interesting in so many different ways. That was just great football. And maybe we need to celebrate that a little bit more in our lives. But the Burrow story, I would definitely watch that one.
Well, I appreciate it, you know, because he was fantastic quarterback. Anybody follows him in the pros, they'll see why.
Charlie, thank you for the phone call, and I don't disagree, man. And again, he's one of those rare characters that Joe Burrow could walk that fine line between cocky and confident, and everyone's like, yeah, I get it, because you were just that good. And, of course, he's had a lot of success over there with the Cincinnati Bengals as well. So did Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and all those guys. A lot more of your phone calls coming up. We'll talk to Todd Walker here in a couple of moments as well. It's the Paul Feinbaum Show.